And hello to Youth Arts Underground. I am your host, Riley, and I am joined by my amazing co-hosts,
Victoria,
Cameron.
And today we will be interviewing the illustrious Kevin Scanlon.
Hi, how are you?
Photographer extraordinaire.
Yes. We will be talking all about the art of photography, what it's like to live as a photographer, you know, maybe some experiences with starving, you know, general art-related job stories. First off, before we do any of that, we're going to play a song.
A song about the emotional power of photographs.
It's relevant. So, anyway, we're going to play the song, 7 minutes long. Stick with us. When we get back, we will get to all the interesting little tidbits.
And we're back with Kevin Scanlon. Kevin, why don't you introduce yourselves for the good folks at home?
My name's Kevin Scanlon. I'm a photographer based in Los Angeles. That's all I got.
What do you photograph, typically?
I photograph people. I take portraits of people for magazines and newspapers and advertising and album covers and all kinds of
not just stuff. People, like some very like famed people like Clint Eastwood and Beck and all those kinds of people.
Yeah, a lot of entertainment based work for sure. And that'll happen when you live in Los Angeles. A lot of it's actors and directors and producers and writers, and then a lot of music stuff. Worldwide known and a lot of people who are legendary, and then a lot of new up and comers too, which is definitely refreshing.
Mm-hmm. So, tell me, how did you get started in this business?
I grew up in a creative world. My dad does a lot of music. He played piano growing up, and he played in a jazz band in college. And so there was always music around. My sister and I would listen to records and things like that in our attic growing up. And my sister's always been an illustrator. She's 4 years older than me. And she was, ever since I can remember, she would be, she would do little Garfield drawings and drawings of horses and things like that. And for her, it has developed into a career. She got a degree from Carnegie Mellon University in illustration. And that's been a lifelong thing for her. And I always tried, following in the footsteps of my older sister. I tried to do drawings, and I tried, I would draw sharks, but there would be this really awful, very kind of like stick figure-y thing. And when I would try to do like shading and stuff, it would just, I think about the drawing that...
get artist skill.
It's like... from Napoleon Dynamite, that portrait that he did, that was me. I was trying really hard, but I took an elective early on in high school, a printmaking elective, which included offset printing, darkroom printing, and screen printing. And I was immediately drawn to the photography portion of that class. It was this great mix between the science, which was my strength, working with numbers and chemistry and things like that, figuring out exposure and all that sort of stuff. The marriage between that and also doing something creative, which was, so it was the perfect mix for me at the time. And I was instantly hooked. And, I had a couple of people in high school and college who really helped me along to help me sort of find, a specific direction in photography. There's a photographer in New York named Ben Stuchelty, and we went to the same high school and college together. He's 2 years older than me, so he had a little bit more experience and a little more knowledge in the photography world. And, he introduced me to... Sebastio Salgado and James Noctway and like all the Magnum photographers and the documentary photographers of black and white 35mm stuff and doing extremely excellent work, and that was really inspiring. And then at the same time I was drawn toward Ansel Adams and the straight photographers, the F64 photographers, from the 20th century, and so that was, like using large format cameras and shooting landscapes. And, over time, I sort of found my niche, but it took a long time to develop that.
What were you trying at beforehand?
Well, by virtue of having been a musician for most of my 20s, I had my feet firmly planted in the music world. I always brought a camera with me when my band went on tour. I would shoot, portraits of us for the record or for publicity shots. I shot a couple of our record covers. And then other bands too, you know, I would do live shots of bands that we were on tour with, and, you know, behind the scenes, backstage and in the van and, you know, at the Denny's and all that kind of stuff. Hmm. So it was sort of taken away from the large format, formal, you know, landscape photography, and it became much more of a practical device where, you know, instead of keeping a diary of, you know, of what we were doing each day on tour, I would have this visual record, you know. So it quickly became like a music photography world for me. And I wasn't doing it for money, you know. I was just doing it for the enjoyment. I was doing everything I could to make money from playing music, but the photography thing was sort of an auxiliary of what I was really trying to do, which took the pressure off, you know. I mean, it was just something I enjoyed.
I think that's. Would you say that was one of the things that? That's part of the reason you got into it. With music, you put all this pressure on it, but with photography, it was just something you did. It was like it was almost like a hobby. So it was something that was open. It was something you could just do. You wouldn't have to think about it.
It was completely on my own terms, you know, and there was no pressure. I didn't have to pick up the camera if I didn't want to. It was something that I was doing constantly for the enjoyment of it. I didn't know later how useful it would be, A, to prepare me for when work came along, but B, just to have a visual history of everything that I was doing at the time. And there are gaps. There are times when I put the camera down because I was sick of it or because I ran out of film or for whatever reason. And, you know, it's regrettable because those are times where I was like, well, I know we went to Austin to play South by Southwest, but I have like the one shot outside of the hotel, but that's it. And like, where did we play? What did we do? Who were we with? You know, all those things are gone because I have a terrible memory and I didn't write.
That's an interesting angle. You keep coming back to how you seem to be very, very interested in cataloging things and archiving things. Do you think that's a motivator for why you've gotten to photography? Because it's a way to catalog, you know, what you're doing. It's
absolutely, you know, when I travel, that's how I share my experience with people, but then that's also how I create my own memories. You know, and all the while trying to do it in a way that's interesting and creative and tells a story. But even when I'm on assignment, you know, I have my camera that's, you know, that I use for the job, but then I'll have a secondary camera that'll just take in snapshots of the environment of you know, the studio or of my crew working and, you know, things like that. So it is a constant, a constant flow of work for the purpose of remembering, for the purpose of sharing. But again, you know, while I was in the music world, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was preparing me for a career in the future.
Do you feel there's a tie between musicality and photography and composition and all that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, for me, it's the two creative endeavors that have had a strong presence, you know, almost pretty much my entire life. And there are a lot of parallels. You know, there's the recording process, right? You know, I mean, you take sound, it goes through a microphone onto tape or, you know, hard drive or whatever. And it's the same thing with photography. You have light, it goes through a lens and it gets recorded on film or on a digital sensor. And, you know, you can manipulate it afterwards. You know, you change color and contrast with photography, or you change the mix and you change the treble and bass and, you know, compression and things like that, you know, with music. I mean, there are, you know, you can have a gallery show with photography, or you can perform on stage in music. I mean, there are all these parallels that over the years, you know, really fascinated me. But at the same time, they're so different. You know, one's light, one's sound. And for me, that having that balance between the two really kept me sane, and it kept the other fresh when I was focused on one. You know what I mean? So, you know, if I was burned out on music after coming home from a tour, you know, the band, we wouldn't rehearse for a few weeks just to kind of like decompress and whatever. But during that time, I was fully engaged in photography. And, you know, whether it was shooting new stuff, or it was, you know, developing the film that I shot when we were on the road and making prints and things like that, you know, working in the darkroom, I was really engaged. You know, I would go down the rabbit hole with one, and then when I came back to the other, it was this refreshing new approach where I would draw parallels and I would apply it to the other.
That seems to be a sort of common thing where it's not just that one influences the other, but they allow you to. It's hard because then you get into the whole like where does creativity come from thing, but it's different ways of expressing that feeling, and allows you to approach things from different ways. You don't have the same preconceptions when you're working with film that you do when you're working with music, you know, for example. But you're still thinking the same way. I don't know. It's one of those things that interests me, is how you have these things that on the surface are polar opposites, but when you actually work with them, you realize it's the same process. I don't know. Do you have like any specific examples of like where you had like a sort of light bulb moment where it's like,
that's a good question. I know there are, and I you know, I sort of came to realize a couple of those in the past. And this would have been fairly early on in my photography career, because I was, you know, I was fresh off the heels of having been in this band for 8 years, and those were things that I had a really heightened awareness of. It's been a long time. I mean, I still do, you know, I play music once in a while and I record once in a while with some friends of mine, and but it's not like it used to be. So, you know, so there was a time when I drew very, very specific parallels between photography and music, in these minute, you know, facets that, I mean, it was like, you know, even in terms of like a wide angle lens, you know, you got your wide angle lens and it captures, you know, a whole room. And that could be, you know, to me, that was the same as an omnidirectional microphone, where, you know, it's got this circular pattern capturing sound from all over, and then you might have a telephoto lens. It's a long lens. It's got a very specific point. Wherever it's pointing at, that's all it's going to capture. And that, to me, that the parallel would be like a shotgun microphone, where, you know, it's like this very narrow capture range, and if you're off that range, you know, there's no sensitivity there. There's nothing, no sound is getting in. So that's, you know, that's one example, you know, that sort of occurred to me over the years, you know. There are more, you know, that to me is the most obvious example.
I think we can get into that in a minute. First, I think we should take a quick break, and we'll get back into, you know, how you approach photography, you know, how you've gotten to where you have gotten with photography, because you have
very strong resume.
A very strong resume. That's the word. Good, this enough. Is why I have Cameron.
Thanks.
Anyway, we're going to play the next song. Cameron, would you like to introduce this?
I believe you have photographed this artist a few times. This is Beck with a few songs off The Information.
Great.
All right.
my many and fingers working for some god who could see his own reflection in a parking lot. Oh, it's nausea, oh, nausea, and we're gone.
What are we gonna talk about? I don't know! We're gonna
a few songs from musicians photographed by our guest. The first was Beck. The second was Black Flag with TV Party, featuring Henry Rollins.
Hope you enjoyed those tracks. So let's get back. Kevin, can you explain to us the process of a film shoot, of a basic a portrait shoot?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they come in all shapes and sizes. You know, there are shoots that are in studio, and it's a formal portraiture, and so, you know, the same every time. You know, studios are always painted white, or, you know, things like that. And you know, you come in and you have an idea of how you want this person to be portrayed, whether it's a full length shot or just a tight portrait or whatever. Set up a couple of lights appropriately, do some tests well before the subject is going to be ready. You know, it's totally unacceptable for me to have a subject come in and I'm still scrambling around with lights. You know, I know that it can happen sometimes under extreme circumstances, if it's a very last minute shoot, you know, which can happen, or if you know, unexpectedly the subject arrives early and is like, I got to get out of here like soon, so let's just do this now. But you know, I can count on one hand in the period of 9 years that I've been a professional photographer that kind of thing has happened. And then there are shoots where it's on location. So I'll go to the person's house or their workplace or, you know, beach or the woods or something like that. And it's up to me to either scout the location prior so that I know, you know, where the sun is going to be at that time of day that we're going to shoot. Or I know, you know, if there's going to be a lot of people around, like in the public, or and then to figure out where to shoot. And in that case, you know, it's just a matter of finding something that's visually interesting to me and figure out where to put my subject and, you know, again, how to light it, whether to light it, maybe I won't. And so there are a few different approaches. You know, and sometimes it's if I'm going out on the road with a musician or something like that, just, you know, shooting on the fly. You know, I'm just there, like fly on the wall, capturing what I see, you know, and the moments that are happening, and you know, that's about as, you know, as last second. I mean, like every moment is its own thing. And
so, do you prefer the control of the studio environment or the spontaneity of on location?
I like both. I really do like both. You know, I mean, there are times when, you know, the controlled environment is something that I really, really have a lot of comfort in, because there's no surprises. I hate surprises. You know, if I have an expectation of what needs to happen on a set, it better happen like that. You know, that's why, I mean, you know, that's why I love Southern California so much, is because, you know, there aren't the weather surprises, you know. It's pretty much sunny and warm every day of the year, you know, and for the most part. If I lived in you know, like Pittsburgh where I grew up, or in Portland or something like that, it'd be like, you know, you never know what you're going to get. And that makes me crazy. So, but then also, yeah, like, so the controlled environment is something that I have a comfort working in, and I do that a lot, and I create that world for myself. But I need it balanced out with chaos, you know, with not knowing what's going to happen, with you know, with sort of going with the flow and just capturing moments, whether it's predictable or not, whether it's under my control or whether I'm just like a part of the process and just doing my best to capture it. You know, I've always had a tremendous amount of respect for war photographers, and I've always wanted to be able to to do what they do, maybe not necessarily with bullets flying over my head, but, you know, in an environment where they're capturing these images that are so thought-provoking and action-oriented and in the moment, and to be able to pull that off in a way that's artistic and tells a story, and, you know, all of those elements come together, and it's in focus and well exposed and, you know, all that stuff. It's powerful to be able to do that, and that's something that I've always strived for, in a variety of, you know, not in war, but maybe, you know, on the road with a band, or you know, whatever it is.
Now, you've done a lot of work with film and digital. Do you prefer one more than the other?
Well, I definitely have a sensibility of old things. You know, like the musical instruments that I played were often vintage guitars and vintage amplifiers and things like that. Partly because of the way that they sound, partly because of the way they feel, partly because of the way they look, or like how they were made, and, you know, just that whole philosophy, like handmade or whatever.
Like, it has soul.
Yeah, right. It has a history to tell. You know what I mean? So I think that cameras can be the same way, you know, and but then also the philosophy of shooting analog, you know, it's real, it's tangible, it's, you know, it is what it is. And then Polaroids too, pulling a Polaroid and having that moment instead of the immediacy of seeing the digital shot on the back of my Canon, you know, it's this thing, and we got to wait here for 15 seconds. You know, like, this is a, you know, it's such a rare thing these days to have to wait for something, unless you have an old iPhone like me, and then you're waiting for everything. But, you know, it just kind of gets this pace, you know, and I really do miss it. Now, you know, I talk highly about film and digital and Polaroid and all this, but to be honest, for work, I haven't really touched a film camera since 2007 probably, or 2008, with the exception of just 2 days ago. I had a photo shoot in which my subject requested film, but I welcomed it. You know, I mean, it's somebody has to force me to to shoot film, because I don't do it instinctually, you know.
Speaking of subject, what's it like working with your different subjects and like the connection between them and like what their input for the photograph is going to be?
You know, it's not that often that a subject has an opinion about how they're photographed. I don't know if it's just that they're photographed so often that they just trust each photographer, or if they trust me because they see the work that I do, or if it's because they just don't care. But once in a while, a subject will have a specific need that they want to have fulfilled, and I'm happy to work with them on that. You know, otherwise, you know, I'll just, if left to my own devices, I'll do my own thing, and I'll be perfectly happy with it, and, you know, even excited about it, and hopefully they are too. But most of the interaction is limited to, you know, like actually the photo shoot, not so much in planning for the photo shoot. So yeah, I mean, you know, and I've seen it all. I've seen people who are very comfortable and professional, like they've been trained to sit in front of a camera. They know how to, you know, they know where the light's coming from. They know what kind of lens I'm using and what kind of coverage there is around them and how they sit and how they look and all this stuff. So that's a part of it. And then, but then I've also seen people who are, they walk in for the photo shoot and they say, I hate having my photo taken. Hmm. And that's, you know, to me, like, I understand, I get it. that's pretty much the worst thing somebody could say to me when they walk in to a photo shoot, because now I'm walking on eggshells, and you know, and I've got that hanging over my head, and it adds a little bit of pressure. But you know, it's my job to make them feel comfortable and to create a climate in which they're going to be photographed well, and they're not going to be stiff and look nervous, and you know, that's a big part of my job, is to make sure that it's as painless a process for them as possible, and get, you know, the image that I want. So working, you know, again, it's been, I've been really lucky that so many of the people who I've photographed, big names and, you know, average everyday people or whatever, have been very, very pleasant to work with. And very, very rarely has it been like, get me out of here. I don't even want to do this anymore. Like, this photo shoot's over. You're miserable. You're making me miserable. I'm done. Get me out of here. You know, it's very, very rare that happens. But it has happened.
Really?
It has happened.
I think actually we're going to take one more break, and we come back. If you don't mind, I think we should get more into that and your experiences you've had.
Definitely.
You know, because worked with a lot of people. So I imagine you have some fun stories to tell.
Great.
Cameron, can you tell us what song we're playing next?
Let's go with the Devo song.
All right. The Devo song. The one song that Devo ever released. Thanks, Cameron.
I can't get no
Strange ways coming today. I put a dollar in my pocket and I threw it away. Been a long time since the federal dime made a jukebox sound like a mirror of mine. To calm my worries, fix my thoughts, fool my hopes like a juggernaut walks. Now let down souls can't feel the rhythm. Sorry entertainers like aerobics victims. Hybrid people light a wooden matchstick. Toxic fumes in the burning plastic. Beats all broken, bones are spastic. Robots talking with a southern accent. Voodoo curses, Bible tongues. Voices coming from the mangled lungs. Need some grit, some get down shit. Don't need a good reason to let anything rip.
Radio's cold, soldiers fight back then.
All the damage felt like a laser manifesto making mannequin melt. Those people phoning in like it's unlimited minutes. Going through the motions just to sing it a bit. Treadmills running underneath their feet. So they feel like they're going somewhere, but they're not. So let's put boots on the warehouse floor. Coming to you like a rope on a chain store. Throwing equipment from a moving van. Grab a microphone like a utility man. Now fix the beat, now break the rest. Make a kick drum sound like an SOS. Hit a tow truck, cause it's after dark. And the dance floor full, but everybody's double parked.
Another one by Beck there, and one from Devo before that. I believe you actually photographed Mark Mothersbaugh yourself.
I have, yeah. I've shot Devo live, but then I did a portrait shoot with Mark Mothersbaugh as well. He has a recording studio in LA, and you know, and he's got a whole team. He's got a really cool thing going on.
All right, tell me a little bit about shooting him and some personal anecdotes.
You know, he's a guy. He's just a born performer. You know, so he sits down. I have, you know, I'm in one of the rooms in the recording studio with some guitars hanging on the wall behind him, and, you know, grand piano behind him. And, you know, he sits down and he just starts making these faces, you know, like I didn't give him any direction. I just, you know, I was doing a couple of test shots first, and I'm like, okay, ready, you know, so let's go. This is for real now. All the tests are over. Here we go. And he just transforms into this, you know, really charismatic performer. I mean, you know, making faces and doing things with his hands and, you know, on his, you know, like all these like shocked look on his face or whatever it was, you know, it was just all these really, really funny things. Yeah. I mean, he's just in an instant, he was in this persona, you know, it was a lot of fun.
I want to go back into something you said earlier. I don't mean to pry too much, but as always, I find that the most interesting stories in the art world are usually the ones where everything fails. And everyone
I have
has
no
one.
Stories about failure. None.
Really? You don't have one story where you went in and just things just didn't go right?
Oh, yeah. No, I got those stories.
Are any of them legal of to stories. Speak of?
You know, I won't speak specifically about who, but
no, just...
there was a specific reality TV show host who I had a portrait shoot with, and this was actually the second time I photographed her, and the first time she was a delight. It was great, you know. We shot outdoors, and you know, it was fine. It was a nice portrait. She was a delight, no problem at all. The second time, and I was expecting a similar kind of thing. The second time was a very, very different experience, and I don't know what happened on the way to the shoot, or, you know, I don't know what was going on, but the second she came in, you know, and I, you know, like, so, okay, so part of my job is to have everything set up and ready to go when the subject gets there so that they're not waiting around. And so I had a couple lighting things set up, and it was in like this empty part of a restaurant, you know, with a lot of open windows and, you know, really nice environment, nice bright environment. So I had a couple of lights set up and a couple of things to do, and she walks in. She's just like, no way, this is not what we're doing. You know, this, why are you having me sit at a table? Like, no. This is, all this has to change. I'm gonna get my wardrobe and makeup done. All this has to change. It's all about my legs. You have to. I'm not
is
kidding.
Is that a quote?
Yes. It was. That's what she said. She said, you have to show my legs. This has to be. You know, if I'm sitting behind a table, you can't see my legs.
She didn't think you could shoot it from the side and down, or.
Well, it is all about the legs.
I could. I mean, I was floored. Nobody has ever come in to a photo shoot and said these kinds of things. And then she was really mean to her publicist too. Like there was some thing about how the publicist was copied on an email, that this woman thought that the publicist wasn't supposed to be copied on it. And, you know, I got to hand it, you know, hats off to the publicist. She took it, you know, I mean, she absorbed all of this, you know, these mean things that this woman said. And, you know, the publicist kept calm, and she spoke in a very calm, controlled voice. And so, okay, so then my subject left and to do, you know, hair and makeup and wardrobe and all that stuff. And I just looked at the publicist and I said, I want to get a portrait and I want to get the hell out of here. I have no interest in working with this person. I just want to do what I need to do for my client, and then I'm done. I'm not going to, that's it. And that's what happened. I got what I needed. I, you know, my client was happy, and I will never work with that woman again. And absolutely never.
Would you say that tops it in the list?
That is the
like
top.
Ridiculous requests you've gotten.
You know, it just wasn't even a request. It was just a horrible experience, and I will never forget it. And I never show her images. It's not in her shot. And we got good shots. I mean, I was very happy with the images that we got from that shoot. I will never put them in my portfolio. I'll never have them on my website. I won't syndicate them. They are buried in my archive, and that's where they're going to stay forever. I will not...
A specific memory you don't wish to retread.
You know what? I actually appreciate the memory because it makes every other person I photograph, even if they're just like... Even if they're boring or if they're unpleasant to be with, it wasn't like that. So in a way, you know, maybe I should put her portrait up on my wall because then I'll really remember that everything that I've done since then and before has been a delightful experience.
Everything just turns a little bit more sweet by comparison.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does it feel to be an award-winning photographer? I mean, seriously.
How does it feel to be a genius?
Victoria, it feels great. No, I mean, look, you know, I submit images to contests because, you know, it's one thing for clients to keep coming back to me and hiring me. Like, it's very flattering, and I appreciate that they trust me to fulfill a need that they have. But it's also, you know, entering contests and getting into the photo annuals every now and then and winning these competitions is great because, you know, that means that my peers, you know, because those contests are judged by photo editors and art directors and gallery owners and people who have their finger on the pulse of the photo world. And when they, you know, when they select my images, I don't know how to say it. I mean, it's something that feels good that the people who are very knowledgeable about the photography world and are involved in current, you know, trends or whatever, that they say they look at my work and they say yes, you know, I love it. I don't always get accepted. I mean, you know, I submit to contests all the time, and you know, sometimes I get in, sometimes I don't. But to have that acknowledgement from people who are, you know, so knowledgeable about photography, you know, it's really an important thing to, you know, I enjoy looking through the photo annuals to see who else is out there, to see my friends, to see, you know, new photographers who I never knew about before, and to see new, you know, portrait techniques and things like that. It's a very refreshing thing, but it's also very humbling to be a part of it as well, to be in those issues. Mm-hmm. There was another part of your question though, outside of the contest world, or there was I thought you were going somewhere, maybe not. But there was something that I wanted to say that I can't remember now.
Don't worry. It'll come back to you.
All right.
I think that's actually a good thing to bring up is when there's this sort of mythology about artists who are like amazing artists. You have normal artists and then you have the great artists.
Like in the world history?
No, like
just current,
like in both.
Yeah.
When people look back on artists who are considered great, they're sort of looked through with this lens as if they're like beyond human. And even current artists are looked at as if they have this sort of otherworldly perspective. But at the end of the day, it's just about doing what they like doing. And it's just about interacting with the people who also like what they like doing.
Absolutely. You know, it's this odd juxtaposition when you're self-employed. You know, to be great and to be getting better at whatever it is that you're doing, but also to be able to sell yourself, to get out there, to get the work. You could be the greatest photographer in the world, but if you're living in a cave and you're unable to connect with people and to show your work or to get, you know, to compel clients to hire you, you know, are you going to earn a living, you know, being the best photographer in the world, but being a hermit, you know? So for me, I'm a much better photographer than I am a marketing, you know, manager. I'm not somebody who is out there hustling. I mean, I do hustle, but I'm not like a natural born schmoozer. Like, it's something that I have to specifically think about. It's something that I have to remind myself, you know, if I have a meeting to make these points, or to try to seal the deal. You know what I mean? Like, and that, again, it's like, it's not something that comes naturally to me. I have to specifically think about steps to take toward, you know, trying to sell myself as a photographer and to try to get people to see my work and to have a need or, you know, to hire me, you know, whatever. And so it's this odd juxtaposition that I will forever continue to negotiate, you know, and to try to improve.
Now, for photographers that are like barely starting out, what advice would you give to them?
You know, the way that I always repeat the story about how I got published for the first time. You know, this was literally the month that my band decided to stop playing. And you know, having come out of the music world, you know, I mean, I was constantly photographing bands live, you know, my friends' bands, guys who were on tour, you know, things like that. And there was the local paper, the Phoenix New Times. It's like the LA Weekly out here. When I was living in Arizona at the time, they put on a music showcase, and it was basically this competition between a lot of local bands, and you know, the fans would write in and vote for, you know, who their favorite band was. And at the time, the Phoenix New Times had a staff photographer, and he was assigned certain bands to cover for the contest. And I wasn't involved in that. Like, I was just going with my camera and I was photographing my friends' bands, and just for the heck of it, you know, maybe they could use the images for their website, or maybe I can use them for my website, or, you know, whatever. It was just me doing whatever I do. And well, it turns out that it was my friend's band who won the contest, and they weren't on the shot list for the staff photographer. And it got back, and I had a couple friends who were working at the Phoenix New Times, and I knew from my band, I knew the music editor and the art director as well. And so they found out that I had photographed these bands, and they come to me and they say, "Hey, Kevin, can we take a look at these images?" And I said, "Sure." So I went to my darkroom, made a couple prints, went down to the office, and they're like, "Oh, these are great. Can we run them?" And that's the first time I got published. Mm-hmm. And it was just me doing what I do, and it all worked out.
Right place at the right time.
The right place at the right time, but it's being active. It's being, you know, it's being proactive. Really, I mean, it's, you know, I could have been there and not taken pictures. I could have taken pictures, but if I didn't know some of the people at the paper, they wouldn't have known how to get a hold of me. They wouldn't have known that I did take those pictures, you know, or being friends with the bands. Like maybe the band said, "Oh, cool. Well, you know, our buddy Kevin took these pictures. You should contact him, you know, and check him out. Maybe you guys would like to publish them." So it's a whole bunch of things sort of coming together at once. But the point is to, you have to do something, and for me, the sort of the philosophy, you know, you hear about, like, you know, environmental change, you know, like, think globally but act locally, right? It's the same thing with a photography career for me. You know, I wanted to shoot for, you know, Revolver magazine, or, you know, Rolling Stone, or Spin, or like these big music magazines, and, you know, but, you know, are they just going to hire me to photograph, you know, the Foo Fighters for a cover. Like, no. So for me, it was treating my photo shoots with the local bands who I knew, treating that as if it were a cover shoot for a big monthly magazine, and showing that work. You know, I would fly to New York. I would get meetings with photo editors at these magazines and the record labels and things like that. And I would show them my portfolio, and it was all, and you know, I'll tell you what, this was, you know, probably 9 or 10 years ago when I first started going to New York to show the work. And I look at the portfolios that I took back then, and I'm just like, oh my God, you gotta be kidding me. Like, this work was awful. The presentation was awful. This portfolio, the cover, the pages, the design, everything. It's like, you gotta be kidding me. But it didn't matter at the time. And I did get work from going there and showing, you know, developing these relationships. I still have clients now who I started working with way back then, and they still hire me. And I still go in and I show them my latest portfolios. And, you know, it's a world away from what I was doing before, but it's being proactive, and it's knowing that next year my portfolio is going to be better than it is now. But that's not stopping me from going and showing my work. So the most important thing is to you know, photograph the people you know, but treat it as if it's a Clint Eastwood or a Beck or whatever, you know, and to show that work to small local papers, you know, but have a meeting with them and treat them as if, you know, they're the director of photography for Vanity Fair, or, you know, what, like, you know, you treat it as if it's the most important thing and the absolute goal, and you know, that's,
you do the best you can, and you always put your all into it, regardless of, you know, how good or not good you think it is.
Absolutely. I mean, I do photo shoots where I lose money, and I know, because I want those resources. I want those extra lights. I need that extra assistant. I want the location permit or whatever, where I'll spend more money than I'm earning. But that's what you know, it doesn't happen that often, but I don't want to go broke, but there are times when that's what I need to do, because in the long run, that is more important than making the whatever money from that one photo shoot. It's more important for me to have this image to show, because I have this very specific vision for it or whatever. And, you know, often, hopefully, it will beat the expectations of the client, and they'll be like, wow, you know, this is better. These are more images than we expected. These are more setups than we expected. This is a bigger production than what we expected. You totally knocked it out of the park, and they will always remember that, and hopefully hire you again.
And that's the secret.
That's kind of the philosophy that I've taken, is to give 110% for each shoot, and to beat your client's expectations.
So what is the future of photography?
You know, a lot of people are talking about the end of print media. A lot of people are talking about the end of still photography. You know, I think that there's some truth to a movement toward electronic only versions of magazines and newspapers and how we consume information. I don't think it's happening as quickly as some predicted, but there's definitely a trend to that. And, you know, there's this notion that all imagery will be captured through video, and you can pull stills from that, and that definitely has its applications. For me, I've dabbled in the world of motion, but I'm still drawn back to the still photography, and I don't think that that's going away anytime soon. I think that that will have a place for a long time. You know, even you know, a lot of the camera companies are building their cameras. You know, the improvements seem to be heavily weighted toward video. You know, I mean, a couple of the latest Canons that have come out, you know, you see these improvements with video capture and, you know, things like that, where, you know, the improvements for still photographers doesn't seem to be there. You know, it's and it might be smart business or whatever, but, you know, for me, the camera that I bought 3 years ago is, in my mind, still the best camera for my needs.
You know what you want to do, you know what you want yeah. out of the shot, and it gives it to you.
Yeah, and I know when the next camera comes out, like, I know what my needs are to improve upon, you know, what the equipment that I'm using now. They haven't done it for me. So I haven't bought a camera in 3 years. But, you know, when I see those factors begin to change, then it's like, okay, yeah, this is the camera that I need now because it's better for what I need.
I think the future of all art mediums in general is a really hard topic to tackle because it's something that dips into the advancing of computers, the advancement of interface, and all of these different areas of science that really, from this, you know, from at least from my perspective, aren't, it's not something I'm intimately familiar with, and it's something that I don't think any of us are really qualified to predict. It's interesting. I'm looking forward to see what happens, but I think what we're going to do is we're going to take one more break. We're going to come back. We're going to have a few last questions, cool. and we're going to send it out. Cameron, would you like to introduce the song we'll be playing next?
Hmm? Why do you want to play? Play Neil Young.
You know, you're totally ruining the illusion here. This is supposed to be a clockwork planned thing here. This is supposed to be a well-oiled machine.
It is.
We planned all of this in advance, Cameron, and you just ruined it. Well, there you go, folks. We're all doing it live, and there are mistakes. Here's Neil Young. I hope you're happy, Cameron.
We'll be right back. goal in life was to be an echo. Riding alone, town after town, toll after toll. A thick span out through the great southwest to forget her. She appears in his dreams, but in his car and in his arms, a dream could mean anything. A cheap sunset on a television set could upset her, but he never could remember to remember me, standing still in your past, floating fast like a hummingbird. His goal in life was to be an echo, the type of sound that floats around and then back down like a feather. But in the deep chrome canyons of the loudest Manhattans, no one could hear him or anything. So he slept on a mountain in a sleeping bag underneath the stars. He would lie awake and count them, and the great fountain spray of the great Milky Way would never let him die alone. Remember to remember me, standing still.
That was Neil Young and Wilco there, also subjects of our guest photography. So, who's your favorite person that you photographed?
Because we can't be entirely negative.
And this is just your favorite at the moment, so the other ones don't need to be offended.
No, I have favorites for different reasons. I have a favorite because I love the way that the images turned out at the end. I have a favorite because, you know, the experience of that person, and, you know, and then so there are a variety of favorites. I mean, I can think, you know, Clint Eastwood, hands down, was absolutely among the best, because, you know, this is a guy who's been at it for a very long time. He's you know, been a phenomenal actor for a long time. He's been an incredible director, and, you know, I photographed him three times, but the most recent time was a sort of a spend the day with him working, and this was when he was editing Invictus, and he has an office on the Warner lot, and his editing suite is in the next building over, and it was just him interacting with his producer, him going in and looking at a couple of edits with his editor Joel Cox, and interacting with, you know, people in his office, and, you know, being in at his desk on the phone, so all kinds of things, and you know, it was as if I was I was introduced to my dad's old college friend. You know, he was so welcoming and personable and conversational. You know, there was no attitude. You know, there was no, you know, like, who was this young photographer? Like, you know, what? It was just such an incredibly positive experience because, you know, this is a guy, he doesn't owe anybody. I mean, he doesn't need somebody like me to, I don't know. There are a lot of ways of looking at it, but, you know, and it could very well have been, an experience where he kind of blew me off and he wasn't paying any attention to me and just like, yeah, do your thing. I got work to do. I got really important work to do. And there are people out there like that, and that's totally fine. Like, that's, I get it, you know. But with Clint, I didn't call him Clint. I mean, I called him Mr. Eastwood. With Mr. Eastwood, you know, it was just such a such an incredibly pleasant experience. And you know, at the end, he's got a piano in his office. You know, he played some ragtime tunes for me and my assistant. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was just like, is this really happening? It was incredible.
That's like something out of a movie.
Yeah, you know. So that was. So he's definitely up there. He's definitely up there. You know, partly because of who he is, and partly because of the experience that I had with him. You know, but then for a very different reason, you know, Van Morrison. You know, I went out on the road with him for off and on for about a year. You know, shooting, just documenting his rehearsals, doing portraits with him, like formal portraits, doing shooting the live shows, and then like him just out and about wherever we were, and you know, and that was an incredible experience because you know we you know, I was out on the road with him. We were in New York and DC and Boston and London and LA, and. Sure, he has a reputation for being, you know, difficult to work with or whatever. But and there were times where I could see how people would watch him work and take away that opinion. But you know, having spent that much time with him, it's like, you know, the responsibility that he has and you know the way that he sort of conducts live concerts. You know, I mean, he's literally like. You know, the puppeteer, and he'll point to a musician and be like, okay, you're the soloist now, you do your solo. And then a couple measures later, he'll point to somebody else and be like, okay, now you do your solo. And, you know, and it's always a different thing. And so, you know, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that kind of, you know, a lot of pressure. And so, but anyway, so, but, you know, again, it's like...
It seems like the jobs that you really remember, the people you really remember, the people who you can sort of see through the way they act, who they are, who they, the people who sort of display themselves, both on the camera and on a personal level.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, you definitely hit it. You know, because this is to me, it's sort of a life thing. You know. Sure, you can go to a restaurant and treat a server like crap and, you know, you'll get your food and you might get it a little faster because you're so demanding. But in the end, there, you know, you're going to walk away well-fed and your server's going to walk away thinking, wow, that person was a total jerk. And you know, you may very well become successful by employing that philosophy in your life and in your business and in your world. To me, it's much a much more pleasant experience for me and for the people around me to be humble and to be grateful and to, you know, sure, if you're not getting what you want, you know, you got to speak up. You can't just sit there and roll over and take it. But, you know, but to do it in a way, you know, with a pleasant sort of mindfulness so that... You know, they so that you get what you want, but people don't resent you for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think we're running pretty close to the end here.
So just to cap it off, what are you working on right now?
Thanks for asking my question, Cameron.
I have a couple ongoing personal projects that are taking a little longer than I had hoped. But it's
always.
Yeah, you know, it's the ongoing, you know, struggle to wrap up a project, you know, like, when is it really done? There are a couple that I haven't even started yet, but but in the meantime, you know, I've got there are some assignments coming up. You know, I'm going to be in New York next week for a shoot, North Carolina later on, and you know, so there are some things coming up that I'm really looking forward to, I started working with a new agent earlier this year who I'm really, really stoked on, and I'm just ecstatic to. She's based in New York, and you know, I can't wait to get out there and hang out with her and to, you know, just to do, you know, just to get work together. And so, you know, a lot of really, really positive things happening right now. And I can't complain. You know, life's good.
All right. It's good that life is good for an artist for the first time.
I know.
I think we've run into some sort of horrible outlier in the artist's spectrum. Someone who actually has life going good.
Did I just screw it up for everybody?
Yes, you've ruined our bohemian rep.
Don't get me wrong, there's an internal struggle that's every day. I mean,
please.
You know. But
tell
business
them,
is good. Business
tell them
is
about
good.
The darkness inside.
Oh, yeah, I know. I can't sleep. It's just one of those things.
Kevin, you've been a... Can I call you Kevin? I mean,
you can call me Jeff if you want.
Right. Jeff. Jeff, you've been a great guest. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I've enjoyed it. You guys have asked very thoughtful and great questions, and it's been wonderful.
I'm so glad that you came on here. You've shared your story with us. You've dealt with my early onset Alzheimer's. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad
it you're happens here. To all of us.
Yes.
No stress. No, we got through it, and I think we're right. Better people for it.
I think that's it for our show. If unless Cameron has something to say.
Anything else?
I have many things to say.
Yeah, they're all my
right.
questions.
Let her rip.
Thanks for being on.
All right.
And keep shooting.
Yeah.
Thank
anyway.
You.
Thank
you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
All right. And good night and good luck. See ya.
Two, one, two, three, four.